Next case is 98-399, Disciplinary Counsel versus Paul Raymond Brown. Mr. Williams.
Good morning. I am pleased to court. My name is Kevin Williams, counsel for the lady. Respondent Brown's waived oral argument, so I would just like to make a few points and allow the court to ask some important questions. The issue in this case is whether respondent should receive a reduced suspension from that which was recommended by the board. We believe that it should not. In this matter, the respondent Brown is facing his third suspension from practice law. First, this court suspended the respondent for 1 year in 1985 for a disciplinary violation involving dishonesty. Next, the respondent was suspended from practice in 1995 for failure to comply with CLE requirements for the third consecutive biennium. Then, while under suspension, he continued to practice law. He has stipulated to practice on 17 occasions. Finally, he swore an affidavit to this court stating that he had complied with the court suspension order and that he deserved to be reinstated. It was a lie. Mr. Brown stipulated that he did not comply with even one of the seven mandates contained in that order. He defied the suspension order and then lied about it to convince this court to give him another opportunity to practice. He didn't lie on behalf of the clients, he didn't lie to win a case, he lied to get himself out of trouble. During much of this time, the last 5 biennium, he was practicing with serial violations of the GovBarter rules regarding attorney registration, approximately 4.5 years practicing while not registered over that period of time. In his objections to the board's recommendation, Mr. Brown argued that the board was wrong to recommend an indefinite suspension, that his failings were due to his alcoholism, and that the sanction should be reduced. He offers only one case in support. The disciplinary counsel be Blackwell. The facts of Blackwell, however, are very different from the facts of this case. Mr. Blackwell had a 33-year unblemished record practice of law in Ohio. Mr. Brown has a history of disciplinary violations, including dishonesty, and a history of serial violations of the GovBarter. Mr. Blackwell was a recovering alcoholic, as is Mr. Brown, but Mr. Blackwell had 5 years of sobriety. Mr. Brown had 4 months. Respondent's record of misconduct receiving dishonesty, of defying this court's orders, of failing to register, of failing to attend CLE seminars, of practicing while suspended, and finally of lying to this court to warrant at least an indefinite suspension from practicing law. There are no questions.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Case is submitted. We'll be advised of our opinion. The next case is 98-401, Toledo Bar Association versus Carol Ann Lockhart. Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge John Young, Judge of the Kansas City Court of Appeals, who I think is here.
Good panel. Good panel. please the court, Mr. Chairman. Your Honor, before beginning, I would like to stand here and make an abject apology to the court. To the extent that in Proposition Law Number 1, I say where the only evidence concerning the respondent's motive for writing out her name in the case from a lengthy book maintained by the clerk of the Community Court was to avoid embarrassment, there is lacking evidence sufficient to establish by clear and convincing evidence that respondent violated disciplinary rule 1-102-4, engaging in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deception, misrepresentation. That is not a correct statement. I apologize for making it, and I hope that my conduct in making that statement is not reflected on your decision in regard to my client.
Thank you.
Caroline Lockhart was convicted of shoplifting and attempted tamper with documents. The activity occurred during the months between February and April of 1996. And for that, those violations, she served 33 days in prison. Following her discharge from prison and subject to her probation, she presented herself for counseling, and she was diagnosed as suffering from depression, which caused her to engage in destructive behavior exhibited by the acts for which she was criminally sanctioned. She has been successfully treated for that depression, both by medication and by counseling. As a result of that activity also, she was charged by the Toledo Bar Association with violations of disciplinary rule 1-102-4 and 1-102-5, conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice. The panel, in its findings of fact, included, and I'm quoting, the question is whether or not the respondent could resume the responsibilities attendant the practice of law, since the respondent still is taking Prozac as prescribed by Dr. Patel and is under therapy at the Harbor Behavioral Care Center. The panel is not encouraged by the respondent's current condition as presented. Therefore, it is the recommendation of the panel that the respondent be suspended for a 2-year period, 1 year to be suspended, and they listed certain conditions. The board, in reviewing that recommendation, stated as follows. They recommended that Caroline Lockhart, based on her repeated criminal activity and current inability to practice law, be suspended from the practice of law indefinitely. The basis for the recommendations of both the panel and the board clearly rests upon their belief that Caroline Lockhart is currently not able to practice law. The fact that she is taking Prozac, the fact that she is currently in therapy, does not mean that she is unable to practice. That is as much as saying that if a person is diagnosed as an alcoholic, that if that person is going to AA meetings, that that person shouldn't practice law. That is not what this court asks of its attorneys. They ask the attorneys to seek help to get it to correct their problems. Governing Bar Rule 5, Section 7, outlines the procedure to follow if a complaint or an answer alleges an existing mental illness. No mental illness was alleged in either the complaint or the answer in this case.
Counsel, because of what has turned up during the hearing, and this has been done before, where something turned up during the hearing, would it be more appropriate to refer it back for counsel to evaluation and make that determination?
I think on the evidence presented at the hearing that there is no basis for such a determination. I think the evidence by the counsel was clear that Caroline Lockhart does possess the character, the qualities, and the psychological abilities to practice law currently.
That's not what they seem to be saying. Both of them are saying, they seem to be saying, we don't think she can practice law, and she had a case to come close to this situation. She's even real problems with this now. Let's send them back, get a competency evaluation. And sometimes that doesn't turn up until you get into the hearing itself and look at the evidence. Why would that not be a better solution than to totally, well, let's put it this way, we can accept the recommendation, we can accept your client, or we can
findings based on the record, and there is a question as to her competency, and certainly I would wholeheartedly encourage the court to order such an examination.
It looks like half of the recommendation is based on their concern that she's not competent to practice. To send her on a disciplinary basis because of mental conditions,
exactly. I don't think it's right either. I think she's been denied her due process rights because we walked into that hearing without that being an issue.
So if we do send her back and it comes back confident, if we do, we take that portion out of their recommendation and reconsider the recommendation, or give them a chance to give us a new recommendation, or if it comes back she's not confident, then you probably would agree she ought not be here.
I would agree.
Well, I thought she offered the testimony of her counselor, who said when asked about the ability to practice law today, and you know it's in the third page of the respondent's or the later brief, the answer is really pretty equivocal. I mean, there's nothing in the counselor's opinion that says she's fit to practice law. Isn't that probably the reason that the board and the panel believe that currently, at least as of then, they had no evidence that she was fit to practice? Is that?
That's the way I'm reading their opinion on it, yes. But I think the answer could have been a lot clearer given by the counselor who was presented. I know that in private conversation she's told me that in her opinion, Caroline Lockhart is certainly able to practice law. It did not come across in her testimony that way, and I agree, and I think that's probably what caused the concern on the part of the panel.
So assuming she's able, we still have to consider what she did, her conduct, don't we? To
yes,
decide whether
that's
we
true.
Think she's able.
But then my point is, I don't want the court to make a decision, nor does Carol want you to make a decision basing it on the same thing that the board is doing. I mean, look at her conduct, certainly, but don't base it on the fact that she is or is not mentally competent to practice law, because we have not had an opportunity to address that before the panel or the court. The rule was not followed.
I guess I would look at it from the standpoint that she is competent to practice.
I think she is.
So
I really
then I look at it. I look at her conduct, and I would decide. You know, I would question why we would give someone a fixed term of a suspension to come back into the practice when there's this kind of question lurking. I mean, usually that's what indefinite suspension is for, so we get a chance to look at the person before they're readmitted, whereas, as you know, if it's a one-year suspension, all they have to do is file certain documents and they're readmitted to practice. That doesn't seem to be appropriate sanction to me, at least in this case. I think I'd want to know more about her when she and her conduct and so forth when she was ready to be readmitted. I'm going to ask the relator that question because I don't quite understand the Bar Association's view on this, but I'm sure they'll explain it to me.
Justice Warren, in the Crowley case, disciplinary counsel versus Crowley, which we cited in brief, a definite suspension, a time of suspension, was imposed in that case with the 2-year suspension, I believe, 1-year stay pending, or conditioned upon the respondent continuing with counseling, receiving treatment for depression, and certification that the respondent was able to practice law. So I think you can do that without doing an indefinite suspension.
Yeah, you're right.
Sure.
Would we be enhancing her penalty? Let's assume just for argument's sake that without a mental illness, we would have given her 1 year. And with the mental illness, I guess I'm sort of prepared to enhancing the penalty to the death of taking out 2 or 3 years because she has a mental condition.
I believe so. And my argument is that we offered this evidence of mitigation and ended up enhancing it. Not mitigating it, it's enhancing. And on the basis of this record, I don't think there's sufficient evidence for that enhancement to take place. If there is concern, Justice Stratton, my client would certainly agree to be interviewed to have that determination made. I don't believe, as I've said, on the record, that there's sufficient evidence to make a conclusion that she is currently unable to practice law. I think she can. And and you have asked that a definite time under these factual circumstances be imposed. The Bar Association made a recommendation in 1 year. We asked for a 6-month suspension and asked that that be stayed with the understanding that she would continue her treatment, that she would continue with all the terms of her probation. As long as she did that, that her suspension be stayed. Certainly, she deserves no more than 1 year suspension based on the facts of this matter. No clients were injured in these cases. What she did was wrong. She admits it. It was mitigated, however, by her depression that she was going through at that time. And it's limited to a finite time. We're talking a 2-month period of time, February through April of 1996.
Is the criminal activity here, Mr. Caruso, something that's likely to reoccur, or was it connected with the mental disability?
Based on the testimony of Paul Dash, it's connected to the disability. Through the depression, she suffers destructive behavioral characteristics that evidence themselves by the conduct she engaged in, that is shoplifting, whiting out her name, those activities.
Do we know, in the record, what caused her depression?
That was not.
We don't know whether it was a practice of law. I know she's not. She could be practicing, couldn't she?
She could be. Yeah.
But she's working at as a waitress, and then I guess at a gas station.
That's right.
But yet there's an urging here that she can practice law.
Yes.
But she isn't. Do we know? I guess we don't know if the depression is caused by practicing law.
Well, we do know that the reason she's not practicing, and she testified on the record, is that because a lot of her practice consisted of criminal appointments, the courts were not making any of her appointments because of conviction, because of conduct. And she voluntarily withdrew from the practice of law because of the pending grievance matters and the criminal
activity.
It's not because she can't practice. The argument by the relay tour is that is evidence that she cannot practice doesn't work.
We don't know if she attempted to get a job in a law firm as something.
She testified that she, in the last 2 years, has represented two clients who were friends and otherwise is not because of the age or so. I believe she testified she's not so. It's only consistent.
The best idea is Kevin neutral. That's what you're after.
We would ask the case court, therefore, to
keep him neutral.
Impose the time certain.
I'll tell you how he did.
Okay. Penalty based is.
So that's the only reason why he had lunch.
Yeah,
you don't use me again.
Absolutely.
I got you. You don't want to be used?
There are no questions.
You don't even have to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Caruso. Mr. Cherry. Tell me, Mr. Cherry, why does the Toledo Bar Association believe that someone who claims to have been depressed and engaged in criminal conduct, some of which is pretty serious, at least in my view, should be given only a 1-year suspension?
Well, Your Honor, the precedent that Mr. Caruso cites in his brief are such that a definite term of suspension has been imposed for situations where client minds were involved in theft. The Bar Association took the position that all of these incidents did not involve clients. None of them are directly related to client matters, and her obvious mitigation ought to be taken into consideration in determining the penalty. It appears, as Mr. Caruso says, that these incidents took place over a relatively short period of time, were indicative of other tendencies towards self-destructive behavior, and though we submit well within the bounds of seriousness requiring a significant suspension were not sufficiently grave given the mitigation involved to warrant an indefinite suspension.
You wouldn't have her maybe I'm not reading something that I should be reading here, but you wouldn't even have her, you'd have her just apply at the end of a year and go through the form we have that said all your clients have been advised and so forth, and she'd be readmitted.
We would submit that the decision taken by the hearing panel, given the evidence that was presented at the panel hearing, is a better view of the circumstances, that she ought to, in view of the evidence that she presented, be required to demonstrate mental ability to emotional ability, emotional condition, which would justify her readmission at the end of the year.
So you'd want her to continue in treatment, or treatment, I guess, and with some report to the court that she is ready to be readmitted to the...
Well, Your Honor, she raised the issue of her own competence and her mental ability in defense and defense of mitigation. And we feel that since that has been raised, that ought to be taken into consideration in her readmission. But at the hearing, in justification, it appears that she has sought and received treatment and is handling her situation reasonably well. It was at the time of hearing, which was January
8th. Are your concerns that are raised by you at the next level enough that you think she needs to be referred for your competency evaluation, or are you satisfied she is competent?
I think there ought to be some evaluation of her capacity to practice law prior to her readmission.
You don't necessarily think that needs to be done now for a different consideration than
given the circumstances, Your Honor, it would seem to me to be more reasonable to have an evaluation nearer to the time of her potential readmission. I don't think a situation with no suspension at all is a reasonable conclusion based on her conduct, but I don't know that an evaluation at this point, we don't have any direct evidence that she's mentally ill, but there's just no evidence in the record or anywhere else that she's mentally ill as that term is defined in the rules.
Either of your recommendations, you could or you can't, depends on what you think of her responsibility in practice. Or do you think that they would be the same regardless of the questions? The way that the phrasing that is used implies that you may have given her this, but because you're not sure if she really did the practice, you're recommending that. Is that really what happened, or are we misreading that?
We recommended a one-year suspension at the time that this was adopted, at the time the complaint was filed. And that has not changed. The Board of Commissioners hearing, she raised the issue of her mental state. And since she raised that issue and presented some valid evidence that her mental state was questionable and contributed to the behavior which caused us concern, that in my view be addressed prior to her readmission.
Your memo says that it appears that she realizes she's not ready to assume the pressures of private practice without additional counseling and therapy. I think I heard Mr. Crusoe say that she is ready. She could practice today. Maybe he'll have a chance to correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought in answer to my question why she's working in a totally non-related field that she could be. She could be, but she isn't. I'm rather incredulous because usually a fixed term suspension is for somebody who has made one mistake. You know, they've had a good record and all this, and they make a mistake, and you think, well, they've learned their lesson. They're not going to do this again. We don't have to check them before they come back into practice, such as the alcoholic or whatever, where we had monitoring and so forth. Here, I guess I don't understand why you would just take, you know, the information we have with their own counselor saying, not answering the questions she's able to practice, and assume that at the end of a year, okay, she's ready to come back in. Is that fair to people that might have her as a lawyer? I mean, she's got a pattern here of stealing.
I think that's a fair question. The response, it seems to me, is that an indefinite suspension requires that she serve a period of suspension that two bar associations seem excessive for the nature of the conduct, given the nature of her mental condition and habit. We don't have any indication in the record or otherwise that her mental condition directly affected the practice of law, her representation of clients.
So if you take the mental condition out and that didn't cause her misconduct, then we have somebody who just steals and changes court records. And you still,
we have someone who did steal and change her records.
Yeah, okay.
And
I guess I understand your position.
Seems unlikely to do so.
That's essentially what you're saying, is you think that, as you judge her, she's unlikely to do this again, and she sort of learned her lesson, and so take a chance.
Given me the circumstances, I'd like to address one point raised in the recent respondent's brief, and that is whether the changing of the court record was conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice. In granting some credence to Mr. Caruso's argument that the evidence does not establish an intent to remove the affidavit or impede her own prosecution. Her activity was clearly an alteration of the court document with the intention to delete information that was appropriately on that court document. It was there once, it was there properly, it was there for a legitimate purpose, and it was put there so she could get possession of the affidavit in her own case. She then went in and altered that record so that it would appear to be something other than it was. And that, seems to the Bar Association establishes that there was conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice in violation of 11285. Is there anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Cherry. Mr. Caruso, you've saved 2 minutes of your time.
Thank you. I just would like to address the question raised by the Chief Justice. You indicated that what we give for a definite time is supposed, it's usually where a person made a single mistake, has learned their lesson, and is expected to go back and practice the recurrence of that mistake. There were three mistakes. But they were over a certain period of time, very close to time. She had a diagnosable condition of depression that was verified by the treating physicians. I would argue that this is that situation where a person made a mistake over a very finite period of time due to a medical condition, depression. She has learned her lesson. She has continues her treatment therapy. This is not likely to reoccur. And as in Crowley, if the court feels uncomfortable in saying we will impose this finite period of time and all you have to do is file a document to be admitted, you can certainly impose the restrictions that she continue her treatment and that she submit proof to the court that at that time she's competent. On the other hand, if you accept our argument that there is no basis in the record to say she currently cannot practice, we don't want you to make a decision based upon belief that she's currently unable to practice law due to a mental condition. If that is your concern, we will submit to further examination by competent qualified psychiatrists. On the other hand, feel there's not enough evidence on the record to justify that conclusion, then please impose the sanction based upon the activity, not upon the leave.
Thank you, Mr. Crusoe. The case is submitted, and you'll be advised of our opinion.